Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 135. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And we are here to kick off the Halloween festivities on this show. And we're starting it off with brand new adaptation of the 1986 novel by Stephen King, directed by Andy Muschietti. Already a huge worldwide hit, which we could probably touch upon at some point. But I don't even know where to begin. I mean, I guess basic story for people who have never heard of it is it's about a group of kids in a small town in Maine who notice that there's lots of kids going missing, and they end up having to band together to fight against this alien evil that takes the form of Pennywise the Clown. At least that's part of what the book is. And this adaptation is only adapting, I don't even know if you'd call it half, kind of half.
It's like the kid portion, right? Like,
yeah. But unlike the book, it does not, the original novel as well as the original miniseries based on it jumps back and forth in time. This adaptation sticks with the portion of the book that concerns when they're kids. And there will be a follow-up chapter 2 that tells the rest of the story. Yeah, I don't even know where to begin with this. This is like a big one for us to tackle.
I mean, it was a huge movie this past weekend. $123 million. At the box office, which is massive.
And that's just the domestic take. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess we could talk about that real quick. I mean, it is a big budget horror film. That's important to note.
Is it a big budget horror film? I think the budget was like $35 million, which, I mean, I guess that is big budget for a horror film, but
it is, yeah, it is. I guess it would be a very moderate budget, I guess, otherwise. But yeah, for a horror film, $35 million is pretty big. But they swung big, and they knocked it out of the park big. I mean,
we're almost a week into its run. It is already the most successful Stephen King adaptation, money-wise, ever.
Most successful Stephen King adaptation. Biggest film in September, I think, I want to say.
I think that's correct.
Largest horror film opening weekend debut. I mean, it's smashing all sorts of records. And I guess to give away how I feel about it, I think rightfully so. I think there's a reason. I think there's a reason. I don't think they'll be able to replicate. I know that Hollywood will want to replicate this, and I'll be glad to see them try. I think it holds a special place in like our generation's memories. The original 1990 miniseries was treated as like, if you were around at the time, you remember it was like the scariest thing ever. At least that's how everyone thought of it.
Which is weird because it was a TV miniseries. Yeah. But some people still think of it that way.
Well, I think
which is some weird, but it's weird criticism against this movie. Like people are like, "Oh, that one was so much scarier." And
we'll get into that. But yeah, I think that a lot of people have that embedded in their memory that it was terrifying, and Pennywise the Clown was the scariest thing ever. I think a lot of people that think that have not watched the movie in well over 20 years. So.
Yeah, they saw it when they were like 12 years old. And
I have seen it in the last 10 years, I would say. Somewhere in there I've seen it. And I do think that Tim Curry, his performance as Pennywise holds up. Or it's at least a cool take on it.
Right.
I've mentioned it on this show before. I think that, it comes off as a 1990 TV miniseries. Not good. A lot of Stephen King books were adapted into these like kind of crappy miniseries for network TV.
Stan, Langoliers, Desperation.
Tommyknockers, I think, even had one. Yeah, so I think that's helps explain why this is just a kind of a phenomenon right now. Because you have people like us, we remember it as kids, we're in our 30s now. A lot of us have kids, and we've been, probably telling our kids, Stephen King still has cultural relevance on top of it. It's just one of those things where it's kind of like a perfect storm of things that that I think is making this a hit, as well as the fact that, I mean, it's just marketed well, and it's a good movie.
Yeah, marketed super well. Coming off the heels of, was it last year that there was like the clown scare going on, like where clowns were appearing and people thought they were, involved in criminal activity around the country, around the United States, maybe even outside the United States as well. And then this is a film where the main antagonist, the visual horror of this, the face of it at the very least, is this creepy ass clown. And they marketed it great. Like, they kind of hit it. It hits, as Jeff said, like the cultural touchstones with people our age. But I think just like visually, the trailer works really well. And it was enough, like, my kids were asking about it. I'm like, no, this isn't for you. Not at all. But, they picked up on it as well, and they have no touchstone to it. So very well marketed all the way through. But I think, as Jeff said, it's just like a really good movie. It's really fun.
Yeah. Let's get into the movie. First off, I think they make a really cool choice. They make a lot of cool choices in this. I think it's an interesting choice, one, to not jump between time, to just keep it stuck in the past. But the other really cool thing is, I mean, in the original novel, as well as the 1990 miniseries, the past is 1950s Derry, Maine. And here, it's 1998 Derry, Maine, which I think is a really smart move. It like speaks to our generation, which is the audience for this. It's nostalgic for the time that the book actually came out, when we were little kids originally watching the original. It also makes it so that when they jump into 27 years later, it could be our present time. I just think it's a really smart move. It also kind of makes it feel like Stranger Things, but it's important to note that Stranger Things is an homage to Stephen King and Steven Spielberg and all these things that we loved in the 80s. So yeah, it's weird. It's one of those things where it's like, to go into video games, it's like when Uncharted took a cue from Tomb Raider, and then Tomb Raider took the cue from Uncharted, and it's a weird like cycle. But
it should be noted that like Finn Wolfhard, who mm-hmm. is in Stranger Things, is also in this. He kind of plays the comic relief here.
Yeah, and as we get into this review here, I just want to say, for people who have not seen it, go see it. But we are going to talk spoilers, because this is an old story. This is a story that's over, 40 years old? Or, no, 30 years 30, old now.
It's over 30.
Yeah.
It's not really.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to be talking spoilers. But, Finn, what's his name again?
Finn Wolfhard.
I think he's even better here than Stranger Things. I think if I'm getting into the strengths of this film, probably my favorite thing about this film is the cast.
They do a really good job. All the kids in the Losers Club are really, really well known.
Yeah, they're it's a funny thing to say about a horror movie, but I think it applies, and it applies especially here. This movie's fun, and what makes it fun are these kids, man. And they're here's something I did not expect to say though. This movie's really funny. Like, I was laughing throughout it, and the audience was reacting more to the jokes, I think, than the scares, at least in my screening of it. I don't know how it was for you, but it's like my audience was pretty quiet except for the things that were funny.
I mean, I saw it at noon, so that's always a different crowd for this. Yeah, they seem to really kind of like the humor of it. There was definitely some laughing out loud from people. But I also saw like a few people kind of jump. There was no like, outward screaming like that, like I've seen in some horror films. There were definitely people that were like, oh God, like
Yeah, I guess here's the thing is last year there was a film Lights Out that I think ruined movie going experience for me because I did not expect it to happen. But when I went to go see that movie, it was a packed house and people were fucking nuts at that screening. Like the audience was more fun than watching the actual movie. Like I like when I watched the movie itself on DVD at home later, I'm like, this movie's not that great. What made that movie so fun was the audience interacting with the movie and just like screaming at the screen and, oh no, don't do that, or you better get out of there, or I, there's people like shouting and doing stuff like that.
yeah.
And like when there was a big moment, people started clapping right in the middle of the movie. And I was really hoping to get that with this because once again, I went on like a Saturday night, 7 p.m. packed house, and for the most part, people were pretty quiet except for the laughs. But yeah, I mean, the movie is, I think, really funny. Like these kids are very foul mouthed. They kind of both their camaraderie and their humor is reminiscent of Stand By Me, which is also adapted from Stephen King. I think that these kids are even like funnier than those kids, and even like raunchier. It's just all sorts of swearing, but also like just dirty jokes and making fun of each other. Also, there is a like running gag about New Kids on the Block that I just fucking loved. Like I've heard there's a scene where, all right, so one of the kids, I forgot his name, loves
Ben.
New Kids on the Block, Ben. He loves New Kids on the Block, and Beverly knows this. I don't think any of his other friends do.
No.
And there's a part where they like go in his house and they're like all standing there talking and he's standing looking at Beverly and she closes his door to show that there's a New Kids on the Block poster there. I don't know why. I thought that was freaking like hilarious. I remember I forgot which critic I heard say that like they thought that was corny. I'm like, I don't know. It totally worked for me. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, it was funny because like she's kind of an outsider in this group anyway because she's the only girl,
And he is as well.
and yeah, he's the new kid in town, so like she's like kind of like, hey, look, like you still are, and I could call you on it anytime, which is it was cute, it was funny, like it's a. It's a fitting scene. Like, it's something a kids would do.
Yeah, I just really love, I just love this group of friends. Like, I wanted to spend more time with them. That's something we'll get into as well later. But yeah, that's honestly my favorite part of the movie is that. But on top of it, I think this is a pretty scary horror movie, and it seems like a lot of people are not giving it credit on that front, which I don't know where you fall. So I guess what
I
do you think?
yeah well I totally agree with the friends and everything, but I also think yeah it has some effective scares. It is a grisly movie. Like there are parts in this film that are flat out gross, like and that's like the opening scene where Georgie is outside in the rain, he's talking to Pennywise at the sewer, and his arm gets ripped off. Was like it's horrifying.
I did not expect it to go that far. Like,
No.
that really set the tone, saying like, "Hey, kids are not safe in this."
And there are instances in this movie where like they do some great things with Pennywise's movement. Like it's jerky, it's quick, it's like lightning quick at times. And that stuff is scary.
Yeah, like I honestly like I found parts of it to be extremely effective as a horror film. Like when they finally go into this old house, this like vacant house, looking for him, and it just kind of turns into a fun house of horrors at that point for like a good 10 minutes. And the part where he has them all cornered, he like kind of has them all cornered finally in a room, and he's like, "This isn't real enough for you." I found that very disturbing. There's a part where, what is Georgie's brother's name?
Bill.
Bill, who's like, I guess the main character essentially, he goes into his basement and he sees Georgie down there, and Pennywise is with him, and he starts
Right
taunting
behind the
him.
wall
Yeah, and then
in that water.
he grabs Georgie by the head and just shoves him in the water and then comes flying at Bill. I thought that was scary. Like,
Yeah,
so
it's like and almost gets him, like it's like reaches out and he almost grabs Bill and like even knowing where the film is going, like it was tense. It's a tense, scary scene.
yeah, so it's weird because, like, here you have me and you, we're two horror nuts saying, "This is a pretty scary movie." Now, like, maybe it's hard for us to judge because we watch billions of scary movies, but like, I feel like that gives me a better grasp on what's working and what isn't. Like, none of it's gonna 100% work on me, you know, but like, I do have the ability to remember what it was like watching movies like this when I was a kid, and this would have had me shit in my pants, man. Like, it would have had me as scared as the 1990 miniseries, and in fact, it's much more intense than that. So,
It's a way more intense, way more visceral, like violent experience. They show like a lot more violence in this because they can.
yeah, it's a hard R.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people, like a lot of people I know, as well as critics, like the reaction coming out of it was it's not scary. And I think that's kind of based on like the legend of what the original miniseries was, like, you know, people's memories of it or what they've heard about it.
Yeah.
It's almost like you if you're a casual moviegoer and you go to see this movie and you walk out of it with your psyche intact, you're like, "That wasn't nothing." Like, it's like someone going on a roller coaster and buying a t-shirt saying, "I survived fucking whatever." Like,
Well,
it's no big deal. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, I guess, yeah, I'm not gonna have nightmares for the rest of my life over it, but I think it's a pretty scary movie.
yeah, I do wonder if I'm certainly for critics, if you know they're definitely taking that nostalgia for the old one, and I'm seeing this on comments on Facebook and other things where people are like, it's just not as scary as the original, and I'm just wondering if that's where the disconnect is, like. Do you guys like are were because you were so scared of the original, and you also this is in effect
When
like
you were 8 years old
right,
or
but
whatever.
also you kind of know where this story's going, so it's not
Yeah,
there's nothing
that's part of it.
surprising coming from it. Like you know how this is going to turn out. Yeah, maybe they change a couple things here and there, but for the most part, you kind of know how things are going to play out. And that can definitely take some of the tension that you feel as a viewer off of it.
Yeah, familiarity.
I just let myself kind of like get lost in the flow of it though, and it works. It's a tense film.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the test is, yeah, show this to your little kids, Chris.
Yes.
See what they say.
Show it to my daughters, see
Yeah.
if they are up all night.
Yeah, I mean, you show it to a 10-year-old kid, that's the litmus test. And then you
Yeah.
show them the 1990 one, go,
I
okay,
said,
which
which
one's.
one's scarier?
Yeah,
Also,
so I
I'll
guess
be
to get
getting
this.
you mental health for the rest of your life now, but.
So just to get that out of the way, I think we both think it's scary. We both like the kids and stuff. Like, those are some of the strengths. I think the core story itself has a lot of strengths to it as well. The way that the horror that they're experiencing kind of plays off the real life horrors that they're experiencing. This story is essentially, at least the kid portion of it, is about kids learning how to deal with fear. Right. And learning how to deal with things that, you know, they're afraid of without the help of adults, because in many cases the adults in this are horrible.
Are the problem.
Right? Yeah, yeah. So
and Pennywise feeds off of fear. Like, it feeds off of fear. So like, the fears here are the foundation for where this movie goes.
Yeah. These are all things, like I said, I like the story. I like the scares. I love the kids in it. A lot of things I really, really like and really admire about this movie. I mean, I like this movie a lot. It's at a point where I will be getting it on Blu-ray. I will be seeing it again. I'm excited to see it again. I'm excited to see Chapter 2. All of these things said, Chris, and I don't know if you're going to agree with me on this or not, I have some kind of problems with the movie.
All right. I mean, I can see that. I have a couple, and I'm not sure if we align on them, but...
Okay. Well, here's my first problem, and I mean, I don't know if you saw my reaction on Facebook, but I saw yours. I saw you really enjoyed it. I liked it as well, but, like, my best explanation for my problem with it is that most of the movie felt like a... like you're watching a recap of a season of a show. Like, you're watching season two of a show, and before season two starts, it's like last season on, and that's what this felt like. They raced through 500 pages of material in this. Like, and this never, nothing ever felt like it got room to breathe or.
No, that is totally accurate. Like, it is. There is never a moment where it's just like, okay, we're allowed to process, because it moves so quick, like from set piece to set piece to set piece.
Yeah, to the point where, like, there are certain things that I think didn't work. Like, there's a bully that's terrorizing them throughout the film, and near the end, this bully kind of gets yelled at by his dad, and then he just fucking flips, like, goes absolutely apeshit, and it doesn't feel earned. I can see what they're trying to do. They're trying to do something where, like, Pennywise is influencing this bully, and he finally gets in.
They don't spend any time with
it. It feels unnatural. It feels like it just didn't feel earned. It felt like, okay, well, this is going to happen now because the movie needs this guy to flip out.
Well, especially since, like, Pennywise is obviously attacking all the children in the town, but we're generally only given the visual of him going after the losers. So, you know, Bill, Beverly, you know, those guys. And in fact, Bill and Beverly are the ones that really get kind of touched on with Pennywise. And was it the Jewish kid, Eddie? Is it him or Stanley? I don't know. One of them goes by the house at one point. The sick kid, Eddie. He goes by the house at one point, and he ends up kind of getting involved there. But we don't ever really see him going after the bullies at all. So he would be trying to, you know, play on their fears, but we don't really know them as characters, so we don't get to see him influencing them through their fears. We don't know what their fears are. Obviously, like, the, you know, the big bully is afraid of his dad and afraid of not being manly, but
yeah,
it's just not there. Yeah, it's not given room.
Another example of what I'm talking about is there's a scene near the end where Beverly finally stands up to her abusive father, and it feels like a moment that's supposed to get a big reaction out of the audience. And it didn't, because they've only done like one other scene in the movie establishing how bad he is. You could say, oh, well, it's enough. We know like what he does to her is sexual abuse, so that's enough to hate the guy. I understand that on a conceptual level, but you need me to hate him in my gut. And in order to do that, it needs to be established more, I think.
I kind of did going. I mean, like, obviously, I knew from that moment, like, but like, he has some lines where he's like, you're like, the first time you meet him, he's like this weird creeper, and he's like, you're still my little girl, right, Beverly? And
Yeah, I
like,
mean,
he has lines like that in like the two or three scenes he's in, but yeah, he's not in it a lot, and you never actually see anything up until that scene.
I mean, I don't need to see sexual abuse, but yeah. Imagine if this was a TV show and you had a full season to do this story that we see in this film. So 8 hours in, she stands up to her dad finally. Like, imagine the visceral reaction you would feel from that. After being put through hours and hours of seeing like her beaten down by her dad, for her to finally stand up near the end, I just all these things that are supposed to be payoffs in the film, I think would have worked better if I'm being honest. If this was a TV show, like I just feel like this is too much material to cram into a two like this is a 2 hour and 15 minute movie, and it feels rushed.
Yeah, I mean, parts of it for sure. And I think that's a criticism as we move on here, that after we're done with it, that's a criticism we can levy against a lot of Stephen King adaptations. So,
Sure. Well, yeah, maybe, but
I mean, this is a guy that writes like he writes tomes and
yeah,
trying
work
to fit it
stops.
into like 90 minutes or, you know, 2 hours or even 2.5 hours. It's rough. It's hard to do.
This is the 1 2 hour and 15 minute movie you'll hear me say, I wish it was a half hour longer. I really, really do. Like, I would have been fine even sitting in the theater because I didn't feel the time at all.
Yeah, because I mean, I think Beverly is given more time as a character on screen, but we aren't really given, like, Ben is just kind of there. He's just the new kid, and like, he's tortured by the bullies, but we don't really get to know inside his head like what Pennywise is torturing him with. We get one scene with Mike where it's like, he's afraid that maybe he isn't living up to
That the Jewish kid?
no, that's it's the homeschooled kid that lives outside of town,
Oh, okay.
the black kid,
Yeah.
and like,
Yeah, his
he has
character
nothing.
felt underserved.
He is just there because he has a bolt gun at the
Yeah.
end. Like he really is just a stand-in character. Like, he's kind of like, we
Well,
need this extra guy.
that's how I felt about the Jewish kid as well. Like, a lot of these kids, you get a scene of Pennywise scaring them. That's kind of all you get. I do feel like Ben and Beverly and Bill get a little bit more.
And
And
Eddie's the sick kid. Well, not sick, but the one that his mom is like, you know, telling him he's sick. So like, you get a little bit more with him, as well, but that's really it. And like, Richie's there as a comedy relief.
yeah, well, I mean, and he's great.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
I mean, not to belabor the point, but right now on the Audience Network, they are doing a TV show adaptation of Mr. Mercedes. And I'm being 100% honest, that's the better King act. That's the best King adaptation I've seen this year. What's so great about it is they're getting to hit everything in the book. And not just that, they're expanding on things from the book. So it's like you're getting everything you love, but then you're also getting peeks into things that weren't there, but
Right.
also totally fit and feel natural and feel part of it. And it feels like it's fleshing out what was already full. Like just for me to be watching these two things at the same time, I can't help but go, man, I wish they just did a TV, like an HBO version of this or whatever. But
Sure.
what we do have,
It's
despite the
pretty
fact
fun.
that's Yeah, despite the fact that like I feel like a lot of things get shortchanged, like what is there, I like. I guess the only other real problem that I have with it is I didn't like the music. Like I thought the score was unremarkable. Like, it's already lost. Like,
Yeah,
I can't
nothing
tell you the
stands out to
score.
me about it.
The only thing that stands out is it does the cheap thing with the scares where it gets super loud. It's like, like as Pennywise will be running at them, they make sure to like
Yeah,
ring
you
out the whole scream
crescendo it.
section. Yeah.
That works though. It really, I
It
know it is
yeah.
cheap, but it works because, like, you see him off in the distance and he's kind of talking behind his balloons, and then all of a sudden, like, he just, like, that jerky motion and the swell of the music with it as he rushes towards you, the viewer, because, like, you're seeing it kind of from the eyes of the character he's rushing towards, and it's terrifying.
Yeah, it works. And while we're back on the scares briefly, I think there's a jump scare in this that's excellent. They're screwing around with the slide projector in the garage,
Yeah.
looking at stuff with Maine. And it was in the trailer. You knew something bad was going to happen, but once it finally happens, and once he pops out and he's huge, he's like the size of the
Super huge.
garage.
Yeah, he takes up the entire garage.
It worked. Like I, it was one of those moments where I stopped and turned and looked at my girlfriend like that was pretty cool. I just wish they didn't go cheap with them. Like yeah, it works, but I think you could scare people without getting super loud with the music. And again, I think the score itself is unremarkable. I think, having this set in the 80s would have been a perfect opportunity to do a John Carpenter-esque score, like Stranger Things. Just do it. I don't know if you'd agree with that, but like, I just love synth scores no matter what. You could put them in a movie set today, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy a score like that as well. And I think it would have worked really well here. But and just overall, I like the music is certainly a point, but I wouldn't take anything away from it because of that, so.
I guess one more thing I want to touch on, and then I'll let you touch on anything else you want to, is Pennywise himself, dude. I mean, the Skarsgård had a lot to live up to. Bill Curry or Tim Curry's Pennywise is legend, and I think it's still legend, despite the fact that that miniseries is not as good as people remember. How do you think he did in this?
I loved him as it. Like
Really?
he is effective in being disarming, like at first with Georgie.
Here, I'm the
Yeah.
dancing clown.
Like he's like playful, oh, there's like the he has that creepy ass smile, which is just perfect for it. But then like there are these moments where like he's talking, but his eyes are wandering around. So it's like he's not it's and as a fan of the book and as a fan of like we've seen the miniseries before, we know that it is not actually Pennywise. Like it is something else entirely, and it is just wearing Pennywise as a costume, really. So it's like it's fighting to kind of stay inside this clown costume, and I thought that Skarsgård does a great job with everything with it. Like he's effectively creepy, all the way through. Like it's really, really well done.
Yeah, I thought you did a great job. I think they did like a good job. Like if you're gonna do a different take, pretty good. I guess one thing is I just don't love the look of him. I don't
Okay.
know. Like I get what you're saying with his mouth. Like he has a weirdly shaped mouth, which is like kind of perfect. But I don't really love like the way they did the makeup on him and the hair.
The makeup's a little too sinister looking.
Yeah, like what I like about Tim Curry's is he looks like a regular clown. Like
Right.
he looks like a drunk hobo clown. And at the end of the day, like if you put a gun to my head and said, I'm like, I can go with Curry, but I'm totally fine with like you had to do something different here. You couldn't just do it exactly the same because you're not gonna live up to what Curry did.
Yeah, no, you need to allow him to kind of go in a different direction with it.
Yeah, like his take on it, and the movie has to have its own take on it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I it's not like I'm just said. I think they did a good job with that part, but I just at the end of the day, I just kind of like the regular looking clown. And I think that Curry it was better at being kind of like just normal at parts, and then he went a little nuts. But
right, like outside of like that opening scene in the drain, and maybe this is, you know, comes back to your point of it being a little rushed, is we don't really get to see moments outside of that where Pennywise is not being outwardly sinister. Like, he is not trying to lure anybody in. After Georgie, he is the terror clown from there on out.
Yeah, and I mean, it's weird though, because I do feel like we get to see him be more playful in the miniseries, but at the end of the day, these two movies are going to be longer than the miniseries by a long stretch. Yeah. So it's weird, but I'm okay with it. I'm fine with that. Like, that part does not get me as upset as the fact that this should have been a much longer thing. But I don't know if you had anything else, Chris. I've spoken my piece on it.
Yeah, I think it's really, really good. I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah, there are, you know, the issues that we've discussed with it, but overall, it is a damn fun horror film. I think it was something we kind of needed. I mean, I think the movies have been pretty good this year. The summer was maybe a little bit weak, despite there being like a ton of good stuff that like we were looking forward to, but maybe it didn't all hit.
Well, Hollywood box office did a shot in the arm, and it got it. And
yeah,
I think the horror, like, I think we've had, at least during the summer, we had one really cool horror movie, and it comes at night. But that is also not everyone's cup of tea, as we've documented on here.
Yeah.
But this is more of like a mainstream crowd pleaser, like, and also, like I said, we said at the top of this, kind of a big budget horror movie. Like, if it might not have the biggest budget in the world, but it looks like it. Like, it looks like a quality fucking film.
That's something that maybe we didn't touch on a whole lot here. It's an amazing looking film. It really is. Yeah. It looks great. Like, that opening scene where Georgie's out in the rain, like, it is this, you know, gloomy, beautiful looking, like, shot. And then, like, Pennywise, like, everything looks great. Like, I don't know where, like, some people are like, oh, the CG is bad. Like, there's no bad CG here. Like, it's a really good looking movie. I don't have many complaints about it. And it's the first film this year that I've come home immediately and pre-ordered. So,
well, you might want to watch your pre-order there, because just got announced. The Blu-ray will, as a secondary option for Blu-ray, extended version.
Awesome.
So I'm all over that shit. Supposedly 15 minutes longer, so it'll be 2.5 hours. I wish there were more, but I'll take that.
Yeah.
But as for the theatrical version, it's time to do the verdict. Chris.
I'm at a 4.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not perfect, but it's damn good.
Man, based on your reaction, I thought you were going to be the higher one here. I'm going 4 as well. So that is it, 2017. If you haven't seen it, go see it. And yeah, I can't wait for the extended version on Blu-ray. And since we're just kicking off our Halloween celebrations here, and we just got done talking the latest Stephen King adaptation, we've been planning this for a while to talk our top 5 favorite Stephen King adaptations. If you listen to previous adaptation or previous episodes of the show, you know we're going into this with no rules. So I was letting anything count, as long as Stephen King is somehow attached to whatever this is in some way, even if it's a sequel to something that was Stephen King based
on him, right?
It doesn't have to be a movie. It could be a TV show. It could be a miniseries. It could be a short film. There's no rules. Me and Chris have not discussed our choices beforehand, so I expect that there will be a little bit of variance between our choices.
I hope so. Or this could be really boring.
Yeah. But, Chris, what's your number 5?
The Mist, 2007's
Cool.
Frank Darabont adaptation of Stephen King's novella. It's about this storm that kind of cuts across Maine and it lays this like heavy fog, this mist down, and if you go out in it, like you don't come back. And so the people in this town, they end up kind of like holing up in this supermarket, and you see like degradation of society in like real time. Like the people just start like losing their minds, being locked
Yeah,
away.
with a strong kind of commentary on religious extremism, I think, in there.
Yeah, like they want to sacrifice people to what's out there. Like, if we do this, like maybe we'll get out. Like, if we get rid of the bad people, we'll get out of this. Like, that's all it wants is the bad people or whatever.
Yeah, and it shows how people are completely willing to follow a religious leader. Someone tells you this is the way, they just believe it, and they will, are willing to do horrible things in the name of that. Yeah, The Mist isn't one of my all-time favorites for sure. I don't even know if it's in my top 10, but what I do love about The Mist is it has one of the most hardcore endings
Oh
ever.
Jesus. Yeah, and I think
So.
that's why it ended up on this list, 'cause the ending is so brutal. It's like just when it's like, "Oh, I'm done, like we've given up," and he's saved, the last bullet for him, and find out that like, well, the mist is over. It's a brutal ending to the film. I think it's a really good adaptation. It's a really good just horror sci-fi film. I've heard good things about the TV show that
I've heard bad things.
you have you? I
Yeah.
some people that I know that like they've liked it, so I have not seen it, but this is the one I would definitely go with though.
Right. My number five is Dolores Claiborne from 1995, directed by Taylor Hackford. I just have always really loved, like, I won't remember if I read the book or saw the movie first, but I've always really loved this story. I think it's got a really strong central character in Dolores Claiborne. I think Stephen King has written a couple of feminist novels. This is probably the most overtly feminist one. Like, it's not the message is not subtle in this. Sometimes women have to be a bitch. Like, that's kind of like they say it outright. And I don't know. I just have always really loved the story. It has probably minor horror elements to it, but it's really more of kind of a murder mystery where this older maid gets accused of killing the lady she's been taking care of for decades. And it kind of also ties into an incident that happened in the past, decades ago, during a solar eclipse. I don't know. I just have always really loved this movie. It's just like a really fun mystery where all of like the pieces kind of fit into place as it goes on. I also love in the film adaptation, like these transitions that they do between the present and the past, which are done before CG. I think they're just kind of doing it with cinematography tricks.
Okay.
And just really strong performance from Kathy Bates as well as Jennifer Jason Leigh as her daughter. I don't know. I really like Dolores Claiborne, and like the more I thought about my list, I was like, I can't not have it on there. So that's where it is at number five.
Cool. My number four is Cujo. 1983's terror story about a Saint Bernard that gets rabies and just kind of like terrorizes this mom and kid after killing a couple other people. But yeah, it's slow build up. It is definitely styled after 1970s kind of like a films like maybe like The Omen. Like where there's definitely like a slow build, but then it hits like that when he finally like goes full rabid and he traps this mom and kid in the car. Like, it is a terrifying, tense experience all the way through. Really good, really fun. And I just rewatched it a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And the dog, Cujo, before he becomes rabid and covered in blood and fangs and snot and vomit and everything, he looks exactly like my neighbor's brand new dog. So that's kind of terrifying.
It's funny. I saw you were watching it, and I like made a comment on your Facebook. Like, some would say this is one of the greatest horror movies ever or whatever. And kind of throwing you off, I guess, because it is not on my list, and I have not seen
It's fine.
Cujo forever. But the reason I did say that is because podcast I listen to, Horror Movie Podcast, the host of that show, like the main host. It is one of his favorite horror film of all time is Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which I totally respect. But I think at number two or three is Cujo, and he will go on diatribes about how great Cujo is.
I mean,
So.
outside of the movie, which I actually saw after having read the book, but I have like a personal relationship with that story because it was one of the first Stephen King books I read,
Okay.
and my parents, I was young, my parents were not home at the time, and it got to that point when the dog is just kind of terrorizing the car. And I was scared shitless
That's awesome.
until my parents came home, and yeah, I stayed away from the movie for a long time, but yeah, it's become one of my favorites since then. So
I've heard the book is even more hardcore.
it is, yeah,
I don't think I've ever
it's
read
personal.
that. The very first Stephen King book I ever read was, strangely enough, Insomnia, which is a big kind of daunting book for like a 12-year-old. But there was two things about it. Like, I don't think, like, looking, and I have not revisited it since. I have not looked up anything about it since, but I kind of remember the story. And there were two things about it. One, I love the idea of these little bald doctors sneaking into people's houses at night. Like, just the image of that, for whatever reason, just captured my imagination. But also, just finally reading a writer where they're writing, you could hear their voice in it. And from that moment on, even though, like, I think Insomnia is one of the lesser Stephen King novels, I was a fan for life from that moment on. I was like, this guy speaks to me. Like, it sounds like a friend talking to you, but he's telling you the most outrageous, crazy, horrifying
Stories,
stories. Yeah. So, anyways, not going on tangent there. But yeah, I need to revisit Cujo. My number four is 11/22/63, which is an adaptation of a recent Stephen King novel. And it was adapted into, I want to say, like an 8-part miniseries for Hulu
Hulu.
by J.J. Abrams. Yeah. I don't know if it was 8-part or 9 or 10, but whatever. It was a miniseries. If it was basically a season of television they turned this novel into, and starring James Franco. And this fucking show, it's kind of like you take Stephen King and you mix it with Back to the Future, and that's what you get. And that's a fucking wonderful mix.
Yeah.
It's kind of like taking Stephen King and mixing him with Steven Spielberg. It just works. And this works like even better than I could have imagined. It's a very simple story. James Franco finds a door into the past that lets him go back to like 1961, I think, or 62. And he spends that time trying to prevent the assassination of JFK. It's just an awesome story that I think would capture the imagination of anybody who would watch it. You don't have to be a horror fan. I don't think you have to even be like a history buff, but one of our friends, Aaron, he watched it based on the sole fact that he's like obsessed with the JFK assassination, and he loved it. I don't know. Have you watched this yet, Chris?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
It's a fucking blast. Like, it just fucking works. Like, as soon as I remembered watching it, I'm like, yeah, that's in my top five for sure. And it's almost more Back to the Future than Steven. Like, Picture Back to the Future turned into an awesome like season long show. Like, it's just a
that
fun
sounds pretty
fucking
cool.
yeah, it's great. So that's my number four. Chris, what's your number three?
My number three is, I mean, I guess what you just talked about, not really a horror story either, but mine is not a horror film. It is more of like an action movie.
No.
It is The Running Man.
I knew it.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. It is not a good movie necessarily, but I love it. It is so much fun. And it's, you know, it's this kind of futuristic game show where they take criminals and they pit them in this like reality death match where they're going against, you know, basically it's like American Gladiators, but to the death. And,
yeah.
And it's so much fun. Like, Arnold is, I mean, he is Arnold, and he cheesy as all hell. Jesse Ventura plays like he's in it, and it's yeah, everything about it I think is so good. There's like great weird set pieces. It is a movie that looks like it is from 1987 when it came out, but it's a ton of fun. Like it's just so much fun.
I have not seen The Running Man in forever. I love that you picked it. I loved it as a kid. Like, I really, really loved it as a kid. I especially loved, like, the whole, like, shooting down the tube thing where they send you into
yeah,
the game. Like, that's
weird, like, bullet tube.
Yeah, it's, like, for whatever reason, that's, like, the main thing I remember from it. But, yeah, I need to watch Running Man again, man.
So much fun.
There's been a ton of stuff since then, too, that kind of... Like, I don't know if it was an entirely original idea by King, but, like, think of how many movies have come out like that. Battle Royale, The Hunger Games.
Yeah, like, they're all, they all
31.
Draw inspiration from this, yeah.
Rob Zombie's 31, not a good movie, but, I mean, clearly drawing from that. Yeah, I need to watch that again. Like, I mean, I know it's cheesy and it's stupid, I loved it.
But it's, like, I mean, we've watched, like, movies that try to evoke that, like, weird 80s
And this is vibe. That.
And it is. This is that. Like, it is the perfect representation of that.
Yeah, sometimes you don't, like, and I've been watching a lot of 80s films myself lately, and it's like, yeah, it's cool to see newer stuff like Stranger Things, like, go for that vibe. But sometimes it's nice to open a bottle of vintage wine and it's been sitting there since 1987 or whatever the fuck, and take it to the source.
My number three
is Misery, by Rob Reiner and from 1990. And this is a real movie. Like, he had like in the 80s, he had a lot of stuff like Running Man and stuff like this. And this was like a real, like, it's a scary movie, but we're going to get big, you know, serious actors. And I guess at the end of the day, I think Misery's fucking terrifying, dude. Like, once again, Kathy Bates showing up for the second time on this list. Her performance in this as Annie, I think her name is.
Mm-hmm.
Terrifying. And James Caan, also really good. It's basic story, like a writer gets into a accident and he wakes up in this person's house who's been taking care of him. And she's his number one fan. And this is clearly Stephen King addressing his fear of, like, crazy fans. But he does it to just thrilling effect. Like, there is a scene in this movie where she inflicts very bad damage on him that is just fucking horrible. In the book, it's even worse. But I think... You know the scene I'm talking about where she hobbles him?
Yeah, in the book, she saws his... foot off
and cauterizes the wound I think, you know, I guess obviously it's worse to get, you know, your legs cut off and all that, but like I think just as a scene in a film, I think it's more terrifying for her to put the block between his ankles like that and take the hammer. And give him this whole speech and him pleading with her not to do it, and her just swinging the sledgehammer and basically breaking his feet off.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, dude. Just, I haven't seen it in forever, but so many little touches. Like, I know you got out because the penguin always faces south or whatever the fuck. Like,
it's just crazy.
I think it's one of the scariest Stephen King films, probably, like, outside of The Shining. But it deals with something that could happen, like, could absolutely happen. Like, the odds of it happening may be a little low, but could totally happen. And there are, like, terrifying people like her in the world. So, yeah, Misery is my number three.
All right, my number two, and we're getting down to it here, so I should note that, like, there are a lot of, there's a ton of Stephen King adaptations, and the way I took this was, which ones are my favorite? Like, I mean, there are ones that I can definitely consider really good, like, probably better movies, Shawshank and Stand By Me. They did not make my list, though.
Okay.
My number two is Pet Sematary. It is a straight up horror story. It is one of my favorite Stephen King books. It is a terrifying story of a family losing their child and then using this mystical like burial ground that can bring like people have used to bring their pets back, but they use it to bring their kid back. And it is super creepy. It has a terrible like Metacritic score, but users like the viewers definitely are way more behind it. I have always kind of enjoyed it. Yes, it's a bit cheesy. It has some like you know cheesy late '80s vibe to it. But I think overall, it's a good effective horror film.
I think it's slightly dated now. I think that when it came out, that movie was really scary. Like, especially at the age I saw it, I should have not seen that movie at the age I did. But even as an adult, and I think maybe especially as an adult, if you have kids, like this is one of the darkest stories ever told.
Yeah.
In fact, like in the foreword for my edition of the book, Stephen King writes about how he's like, this is the one where I'd finally gone too far, I felt. And when he had finished writing the book, he put it away for a year or two because he just didn't think, he thought he had crossed some line, like some taboo with it, and wasn't sure if he liked it. He didn't like how it made him feel, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's because, in my opinion, I think Pet Sematary is the scariest story. It's about dealing with losing someone and dying and death and,
yeah,
it has an interesting, you know, message that sometimes dead is better.
Yeah. oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's aged. I think, look, this last weekend when it did bonkers money at the box office, the first thing that came to my mind is, boy, I hope
we do that.
I hope that means that we get a new Pet Sematary. That's not like, I don't look back on the original Pet Sematary film as poorly as I do the miniseries of It, but the last time I watched Pet Sematary, I was like, man, for as strong as parts of it are clunky, and
sure,
I would love to see a remake, but totally get why that's your number two. Yeah, I think it's a scary story, and it's like you said, it's one of your favorite books by him. It's really high up there for me, man. My number two, and maybe I went in a different direction as you hear, but my number two is Shawshank Redemption. Okay. Super obvious reasons. It's a great film. Like, yes. I mean, this is a movie that has been sitting at the top of IMDb for fucking ever. Which is funny because when it came out, nobody saw it in the theater. But I think if had been a big hit that year, it would have won Best Picture. It's just a wonderful, beautiful film with great acting, great story. Despite the fact that I don't like voiceover, the voiceover is great in it. And I mean, the number one thing, at least for me, about Shawshank Redemption is the last half hour or so, when you discover what he really has been happening, that he's been planning a prison break for 20 years. That's one of the best endings of all fucking time. It's maybe the best ending of all time. Like, I love that ending. Yeah, I don't know if there's, like, too much you can say about it that hasn't been said a billion times. This movie has been in perpetuity on fucking TBS since it came out. Like, it's always on. Everyone loves it.
And it's perpetually critiqued by everyone. Like, it is a beloved film. It's hard to talk new about it because so much has already been said. But it is a fantastic movie.
Yeah. Funny, like, little side note. Growing up, every year I used to get Leonard Maltin's movie guide, which like basically had every movie in it, and with a little short review and rating. He fucking, and I'm doing this from memory, I'm not looking this up. He gave like this Shawshank Redemption like 2.5 stars, and he's like a lot of King's non-horror stories, it's boring and predictable. And I'm like, dude, maybe I'm not as sophisticated as you, Leonard Maltin, but I fucking adore that movie.
Well, I mean, I think that movie has proven him wrong. So
yeah. Over the time, I wonder if he ever changed his tune about that, because like literally, he's like the only person I know that does not love Shawshank Redemption. It was one of my dad's favorites. Like, he had a fucking poster of Shawshank Redemption in his office. That's how much he loved it. I mean, it's just an awesome movie.
It's a great film. Phenomenal.
And now we're at the moment of truth, Chris.
Yeah, we're at my number one, which was your number three, Misery.
Hey, okay. Suck it. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, it's a true movie. It's not the goofy thing, and it's you know, it is the horror of this fan like trapping this man there, and Kathy Bates is terrifying. That the hobbling scene is, it's gruesome. It's I'm kind of glad that they did not go the way it is in the book.
I think it works better.
Yeah. Well, also, I don't know if they would even have been able to get it on film. Like, maybe now, but I don't think you would have been able to do that 27 years ago. It's just a tense, horrifying movie. I love the book, and I think this adaptation may be the best for me of his stuff. So,
I honestly, for me, I like the movie more than the book. Because I think I saw the movie before the book when I was a kid. And then that's the problem with Stephen King, is if you watch the movie first and then you read the book, like the book, yeah, for as good as it is, you know where it's going. And the book had a lot of passages from his books in it, like stories within the story where they like really fleshed out that shit with like what she wanted him to write and stuff. Right. And I think that the movie kind of glosses over it, that stuff, more for the better. The book I also really enjoyed as well, but like, yeah, I totally, like, at first, when I first started thinking about this, I didn't have Misery at number one. I like bounced it around and ended up at number three, but anyways, it's time for my number one.
Yeah.
And that is another Rob Reiner film, Stand By Me. I don't know, dude. Like, it's a simple story about kids going into the woods. And yes, they have an objective. It's to find a dead body. That part doesn't really matter. It's part of it. It's an element. But more than anything, it reminds me of my youth. That's like what me and my friends used to do, is go fucking play in the woods, you know? And swear and smoke cigarettes and kind of do what all these kids are doing. There's, you know, this movie and the story has like a framework of, yes, they're going to do something. Like, it has like a goal at the end, but really it's just about kids hanging out in the woods. I think King said that like when he wrote The Body, he was just trying to throw in as much as he could remember about being a kid. And that's what that book became. And that's kind of how I feel about it. Like, and it was really cool for me to, like, when I watched it at the time, I was like the age of those kids, and it was like about my life at that time. And I initially did have Shawshank at number one, and the more I thought about The reason I put Stand By Me at number one and then switched it is I think Stand By Me is even more rewatchable than Shawshank. I think Shawshank, you know, I've probably seen it 20 times. I've probably seen Stand By Me like 40 times. It's shorter, for one. It's like an hour and a half. It's also lived on cable ever since it came out in the same way. It's just a beautiful film. I actually just rewatched it recently. Funny thing is, went to Walmart. I always go check out the Blu-ray bin. I saw Stand By Me there. I was like, hell yeah, for $7, I'll get Stand By Me. So we brought it home, watched it, and I think like the ending is really beautiful to it as well. Like watching it again, I was like, that's really nice. But kind of, he's just like typing on his computer and he's like, does anyone have friends like they did when they were 12 or whatever? I'm like, that's great. I pop it out. I go to put it on my Blu-ray shelf. And as I go to put it in, I see I already fucking own it on Blu-ray. So that's not a testament right there to how much I love Stand By Me. I don't know what it is, but I just think it's just like a wonderful, simple, beautiful story. I think it's just, you know, if you talk to most people, they wouldn't know it's a Stephen King adaptation, even to this day.
Oh, no, they have no idea.
Yeah, and it's because there's barely a hint of him in it, except that there is. Like, if you read his works, it's all him. It's just without the horror. I mean, it has the minorest element of dealing with death, but otherwise it's just a beautiful story about being a kid and then growing up and thinking back on it. So,
yeah,
don't want to go on too long about it, but yeah, that's my number one Stand By Me.
Awesome.
So that concludes our Stephen King episode and our kickoff of Halloween season. We will be back next week with Friday the 13th Part 1 and Part 2.
Yes,
as well as possibly, and I don't know about you, but for me, I might go see Mother.
Yeah, it's on my want-to-do list for sure.
Yeah. I might try to sneak that in there Sunday morning or something, so maybe we'll have a review of that as well. But at the very least, Friday 13th and Friday 13th Part 2.
Yep. And so thanks for listening. Full spoilers on those as well.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we'll be doing kind of like what we did with It for this, but probably even more so, we're going to talk a little bit more about, like, you know, how it got made and just any sort of details that we know about it and just scenes that we love. And also, and we're going to be going through the whole Friday 13th series for the next month and a half. But just keep in mind, Chris, as we go through this, each film that we do, I want you to bring your favorite kill.
Okay, from each movie. All right.
Yes. All right. So we'll be back next week with that. And thanks for listening.
Movie dudes.